busy week 2020.
Yeah,
that I've been 7 days with a full schedule. At that point, big thanks to everyone who participated, who helped to create it, to spread it. Next talk will be in
translation. You find the possibility to hear this talk in English under stream.privacyweek.at.
Okay, so if you have any questions, you can ask them using the hashtags PW20 or PW20Online via Mastodon or Twitter, or there's also a form next to the stream videos, so you can post questions there anonymously. Again, big thanks to the Chamber of Labor of Vienna, which supported us, and NextLayer, the ISP, which provided us the infrastructure, and all to all of the angels, which is the volunteers. But now let's start immediately because we had a small, delay. Security Fuck-Ups 2020, so which will be brought to you by Hetty. Hetty is living in Vienna. He's paid for destroying stuff. So you can see he's an IT security guy and a geek. And he's also one of the core members of MetaLab, which is Hackspace. In his free time, he's at CCC camp or Congress, and he's also part of the Chaos Computer Club chapter in Vienna. And sometimes he's also playing Capture the Flag at the weekends with his team, We Own You. So there will be a lot of stuff, because maybe you see in 2020 we've learned a lot of stuff about security. And if you say that security is having no unaccepted risk, we've seen that there's a lot of risks in the health factor. We've learned to manage risk and to think about risks. So
let's go to IT security. There are three elements. The CIA is not only the American Secret Service. It's a fundamental aspect.
just die. So that is possible as well. Backdoors. Maybe you've heard of that. It's just it's a door. It's a possibility to just bypass authentication. It can be like a fixed password, default password. It can be weak algorithms. It can be a hidden web page where you have to know the URL to access it. So there are different methods. The most common thing is just a hard-coded password, and if you know this password, you can log in without knowing any account data. You just have to know this one password. A good example for that was the NSA backdoor of Juniper, so it's a bit older. That was a cryptographical backdoor. It was approximately like 2008 to 2015. It was in Juniper devices. It was a cryptographical backdoor, so it was an error. It was if they changed some parameters in the crypto so that all connections could be decrypted. But currently what is new about that is that there was actually a second country which exploited this vulnerability. The NSA did it, yes. That's something we know already, but now that actually a second state also used this vulnerability and used those backdoors. The interesting thing about the report is that the NSA made a lessons learned about that, but they cannot find the document where this actually was written down, which is pretty absurd. I'm not sure if they actually have it, but just don't tell anyone. Or maybe it's, yeah. Well, another thing is authentication bypass. So it's just, bypassing authentication. By, for example, accessing special files where you don't need any login data. There are several different ways depending on the specific vulnerability in the device. Or just a broken mechanism. You can just use a simple password. One more thing is like, the loss of data. So there are two. The one is, what a nice archive, which isn't available. Or the other one, 404 backup or can't be found. Let's start with all of the voters in Israel, registry of Israel voters. So you can already see that in English. So the call revealed all usernames and passwords of system admins along one log. So you could log in and download all of the whole registry. So you actually got like the admin passwords, which is pretty bad. So of course the complete registry of voters of Israel was leaked, which is like really catastrophical. So what does it tell us? Don't use digital voting, use pen and paper. That's the good thing to go. So next thing was perfect hacking tool was Windows Explorer. So it's just like your file manager in Windows. So there's a car renting company which is called Buchbinder, and they had a backup server which was totally open via the SMB protocol on 4.4.4.5. You didn't need a password, you just had to know the IP address, and so you could get the data of 3 million people. So the password, one of the bad things were actually in clear text, no hashing, nothing. And it was 10 years of data and approximately 10 terabyte, so which could be found there. The person who found this tried to contact Buchbinder for 2 months, And they didn't react that anyway. So then they went to a German IT newspaper, which is called Heise. And only when Heise went to them and said, guys, there's something wrong with your SMB. And yeah, only when Heise contacted them, there's been. I haven't found any further information what happened afterwards. So if there, so because that's clearly a GDPR problem. So I didn't find anything if there have been any fines being paid. Last thing I know is that some lawyers try to find customers who want to make a class action suit against them. But I didn't find any more details if there has been any. Final. Yeah. Another thing is. Okay. Okay, so there was an Emotet attack against the court in Berlin. So there was the forensic report on that was actually published. They were attacked by Emotet. Emotet is a pretty well-known spam contributor, spam virus kind of thing. So what they say that should, and the report mentioned, which was published, that actually the whole Windows domain should be reset up completely new to make sure that nothing of the old weaknesses continues to exist. And they also said their antivirus totally failed because the malware was actually known. And the networks, but there was no network segmentation and there were no good logs. So however, we don't know if it's just if they had very bad, if they just configured their antivirus badly or whatever. They had McAfee, but it just didn't find Emotet. So that there was no network segmentation. That was like also really, really bad for them and really good for the malware. And there were also no good logs, so they couldn't like find out what actually happened exactly. So it was very hard to find out what happened and which machines are actually affected. So that was also a catastrophe about that. So they really had to set up the whole thing totally new. A lot of data was lost. So especially for a court, this is like really problematic. I think they also do like terrorist cases, so that's pretty bad when they lose all their data. Well, about this whole thing about data loss. So we have GDPR fines. Of course, we have this. And some companies actually got like huge fines for that. And I hope this motivates other companies to do good data security and practice good data security, because these are in many cases sensitive data, which is definitely not meant for the public. You can clearly do a lot of stuff. You can do a lot of identity theft. You can register accounts under someone else's name. So there's with this data, you can really do a lot of bad things. Responsible disclosure, that's the next thing. What is that? So it's just a process how you can tell any company that you find a mistake or a vulnerability in one of their software. So you give them a certain time span and tell them, you have this amount of time to fix it. And if you don't fix it until then, we will publish the vulnerability anyway. Some of them, like for example, Google's Project Zero, they give 90 days for device manufacturers, and after 90 days, they will publish their vulnerabilities, no matter whether it was actually fixed or not. Some people think that this is bad, some think it's good. I think this deadline thing is good, because in that case, you can pressure the manufacturers to actually fix something. Of course, it doesn't work out all the time, but I generally think the concept is good to pressure them a bit. Of course, that doesn't happen if it's just Chinese manufacturer, which just manufacture something one time and never update it anyway. But for bigger manufacturers like Google or Microsoft, they are clearly motivated to patch stuff if they get notice of it. RCE, live remote code execution. So this means that you can run your own code or programs on a remote target. So for example, on another computer, I could execute my code and start any program I'd like without anyone else doing anything for that at this different computer. So I have complete control of this other machine. A very well-known example this year was a Citrix NextScaler, which was called Citrix CVE 2019-1978 something, I think. So it was a path traversal vulnerability, so you could access paths on a computer you shouldn't actually do, so which is rather trivial to find and exploit. You can also patch it rather easily, but people didn't do it. And the really problem is that this is a very enterprisey software. It was used by a lot of governments, huge companies and stuff. And the worst thing about that was that it led to a remote code execution. So there was a public exploit, which was available on GitHub. So really any bad guy could use that. And just tried everywhere and you load malware on those computers. So if you don't actually patch this immediately, you can think this system is compromised. And after days later, there have been reports about unpatched vulnerabilities. So actually this thing was really patched already in 2019, but the exploits were published at the beginning of 2020, and only then people started patching at all. And it was pretty hard to find out if you are compromised, how badly you are compromised, if you have to reset up your whole system. So that was really a very bad release. Man, do you like receiving emails? By now, I really don't like getting emails. There are bad alternatives, but of course, emails are there, and we have to work with emails. So, and again, at the beginning of the year, there was something great with emails. Or let's say, not that great, actually. OpenBSD's mail